The Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
From Gettysburg to Sicily, and from Incheon to Fallujah, America has been won and saved by an unbroken chain of soldiers and patriots who ran to the sound of the guns, leapt into the maw of battle, and charged into the crucible of fire to seize the crown of victory, no matter the odds, no matter the cost, no matter the danger. All over the world, our soldiers have made sacred the ground where they shed their blood and showed their valor. From Seminary Ridge to San Juan Hill, Belleau Wood, Omaha Beach, Leyte Gulf, and Arden Forest, Chosen Reservoir, all over, and even a place called Pork Chop Hill. And in all of those battles and so many more, some of the best, brightest, and bravest have come from right here at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, one of the great fabled places anywhere in the world. America's Army has never failed us, and with leaders like the West Point.
It is President Donald J. Trump addressing more than 1,000 cadets at their graduation of the U.S. Military Academy there at West Point, delivering that inspiring message where you just heard President Trump speak of service and sacrifice and winning and holding on to their culture and traditions, what makes America great, what makes all the branches of our U.S. military great, talking about the future leaders of America's Army in particular. So that really brings me to our Memorial Day message. I hope you and your family had a blessed weekend, family, friends. For us, we wanted to make sure that we, you know, prayed about as a family. We sat around the table. I made a big dinner last night just thinking about all of those families who still grieve those who made the ultimate sacrifice, and thanking God for those who've done that sacrifice for us, for our freedoms, for America. And when you think about it, there's nothing we could ever do to repay them for the price they've paid. And I'm talking about those individuals who've served and did not come home, came home in a flag-draped coffin, but as well to their families. And so the only way we can pay it forward is with our patriotism. So I know this morning I'm honored, in fact, to talk to another patriot, someone who served in the U.S. Army, and in fact, someone who graduated West Point. Do we have our Senator Dave McCormick yet? I know we're awaiting him, as we're going to have Senator Dave McCormick actually during his visit. He and Dina arriving, and I reposted that just this morning they had met with the Prime Minister of Israel there, Netanyahu, and as well as he is overseas visiting in the Middle East, Senator McCormick, as many of us have been praying for those involved in the senseless violence that struck us here in Philadelphia, that's tragically making not only national but international headlines. And Senator McCormick, thank you for joining me this morning live from the Middle East. I know that you and Dina had put out your prayers for our Philadelphia police, law enforcement, and we're sad to see, you know, that in your home of Pennsylvania, making international news in a tragic way. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. What a tragedy. We were so sad to see this late last night, and praying for the families involved, and hoping those who were injured will have a speedy and safe recovery. But this kind of tragedy just puts everything in perspective, and just shows the kind of leadership we need to continue to deal with the root causes of such things.
When you see, you know, we started out the segment, Senator McCormick, with President Trump as he was speaking to those cadets. It was an incredible scene. When you see something like that as a West Point grad yourself in the Army, I mean, does that still kind of get you a little bit as you look at that graduation and how the time flies, right?
It really does. I remember walking around campus and seeing people coming back for their 40th reunion and thinking to myself, I can't even imagine those people are that still alive at that, you know, 40 years, you know, it seemed like forever. And my 40th anniversary is coming up. I graduated in 1987, so I'm 38 years out. And the thing about West Point is that those timeless and universal virtues and values of duty, honor, country are the things you learn there. And for me, it's been a touchstone at the hardest parts of my life when I've been trying to figure out what to do and how to move forward. Just going back to West Point and seeing those gray walls and those, you know, beautiful mountains and that Hudson River and the timeless nature of West Point. The cadets that he addressed are a lot like the cadets 40 years ago when I was there, and we were the same as 40 years before. It's one of these institutions that just remains the same even as the world changes in the best of ways. And so what an honor for the cadets to have him there. And I thought the speech was a great speech, uplifting, a speech about them being winners and leaders of the future. And I thought it was a great day. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there because I'm out of the country, yes. But it was a great day to watch.
And in fact, I know that you had put out on social media that you and Dina on this day 599 since the October 7th attacks that you met with Prime Minister Netanyahu. What can you share with us about your meeting as far as with the Israeli Prime Minister and what you're doing right now in the Middle East?
Well, you know, I came to the Middle East for three reasons. I'm the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee subcommittee on the Middle East. So this is one of the areas that I'm responsible for. And I came for three reasons. I went to the United Arab Emirates and Israel. The first reason is this is an area where there's a lot of national security issues and challenges. The question of Iran becoming a nuclear power and President Trump's demand that they dismantle. We have the changes in Syria and the opportunity for an opening there. And we have the ongoing war in Gaza. And so seeing that from the ground, is hearing and talking to the leaders in both countries was really critical. Second reason was to just show solidarity with Israel. Israel is a close ally of the United States. Obviously, we had another tragic killing last Friday in Washington, I guess last Thursday, with Yoron and Sarah, two employees of the Israeli consulate there, the Israeli embassy, just tragically murdered by a terrorist. And to show solidarity for that and the challenges Israel's having. And then finally, particularly in the United Arab Emirates, to talk about the enormous opportunity in Pennsylvania. They have committed, that country's committed. We met with MBZ, who is the Mohammed bin Zayed, who is the ruler of the Abu Dhabi and the United Arab Emirates. And they've committed on President Trump's last visit to $1.4 trillion of new investment over the next 10 years. And I wanted to make sure that we had the opportunity to talk about how hopefully tens of billions of that investment would come to Pennsylvania for data centers and energy innovation and all the things that are going to make Pennsylvania the kind of energy superpower that we wanted to be in the years ahead.
And one big announcement that has come since last Thursday, Friday, when we talked about the big, beautiful bill, but for Pennsylvania, what do you see as the economic impact, Pennsylvania and beyond, with this U.S. steel deal moving forward? I know you're very proud of this, Senator.
I really am. Yeah, I got the news when I was on the airplane flying to the Middle East. But on Thursday of last week, I was in the Oval Office with President Trump, and we talked. It was specifically about this deal. And listen, I think he made a great decision. This is a terrific partnership for Pennsylvania. I think it's great for Nippon. It's great for the domestic steel industry. Essentially, what it allows for is $14 billion of new investment in U.S. steel around the country, $3 billion in Indiana, $3 billion in Alabama, $500 million in Arkansas, $800 million in Minnesota, and $2.4 billion in the Mon Valley in outside of Pittsburgh, with the possibility of another billion. And it protects 10,000 jobs in Western Pennsylvania, in the Mon Valley. These are steel workers and all the surrounding support. But it also creates 10,000 new jobs in the building trades to create and build a new arc furnace. So this is a great opportunity for Pennsylvania to really build out a next generation steel capability. And it's I'm really excited about it. It's great for our national security. It's great for our economic security. And the proposal, which President Trump, I think this is part of what got him over the finish line, was for a U.S. control. And that means a U.S. CEO, a U.S. majority board. And the U.S. government has something called a golden share, where they essentially get to approve three board members that will take, you know, very careful to make sure that the actions of the company are in support of U.S. interest. And then finally, this is great for the working families that President Trump, he ran on the promise of creating jobs and protecting opportunity for working families across Pennsylvania, across the country. I made the same promise. And so I think part of what got him in support of this was just knowing that this was going to be supporting the people we made promises to.
And as far as the big, beautiful bill, and yes, that's the act's name, which I kind of chuckle because it makes the so-called mainstream media, they have to say this, the name of it. But where do you see this going as far as the Senate goes? We'll, you know, I'm looking at all the headlines locally, Pennsylvania, nationally, and they're saying, oh, cuts in Medicaid, cuts, cuts, cuts. What do you see here as far as in the Senate with the big, beautiful bill?
Well, I think the House, you know, this is tough. This is tough to get a big piece of legislation when you have very slim majorities. I think the House did a good job of getting a bill passed, which supports the president's priorities of extending the 2017 tax cuts, plussing up our defense budget significantly. We had underinvested in defense, the money to support the border and close the border, as President Trump had promised. And it also makes significant cost reductions in a number of areas. But to your question, we do need to stop the out-of-control spending that's going into Medicaid. Medicaid's grown by $250 billion in the last 5 years. And my position on this is the same as President Trump's, which is we must protect Medicaid for the people for whom it was intended, the vulnerable people, the children, the moms, the people with disabilities. That program is designed to protect them. We have to ensure that happens. But it wasn't designed for working age men with no dependents who choose not to work. It wasn't designed for illegal immigrants who are the beneficiaries of Medicaid payments. So what we need to do is have work requirements associated with Medicaid. This is one way of reducing the waste, fraud, and abuse that's throughout our government. The Government Accountability Office estimated that there's $500 billion of waste, fraud, and abuse across a number of our programs. Listen, when I'm in Pennsylvania, I talk to people about working age men without dependents choosing not to work, and they say, and getting Medicaid, and they say, wait a second, that doesn't sound. We don't want people who choose not to work being the recipient. So that's where the focus will be, and I'm very committed, and I know President Trump is, to making sure that those cuts don't affect the vulnerable people for whom they're intended. The funding is intended.
Now, I know your counterpart, Senator Fetterman, Democrat, he has said flat out he'll vote against it. What do you think will be the main sticking point of this to get it over the finish line?
Well, you know, I think the challenge is how to get the right amount of focus and spending on those key priorities, and also how to do that in a fiscally responsible way. So that's the tension, is how do you find appropriate reductions in cost or slow the growth in spending, which is, you know, really grown radically in the last 4 years under President Biden. How do you rein in the growth of spending while paying for these things? So I think the Senate will certainly try to improve the House bill by focusing on maybe further fiscal constraints, further reductions in spending. But I also think it's a balancing act, because we have a slim majority in the House and a slim majority in the Senate. So my expectation is the bill will get improved in the Senate, and then we'll go back to the House, and hopefully we'll be able to make those adjustments in a way that we can still have the support of all involved. And it's, this is the art of the possible. I think what the House gave us was a good starting point, hopefully something that we can get all the right people to support, including the president.
Yeah, just looking at the headlines this morning, as just to read you some of the headlines here, because you're obviously live in the Middle East. So locally here, Trump's big, beautiful bill facing challenges in the Senate. They're saying that it could stop in the Senate because of GOP resistance. Some are calling it a debt bomb. These are just Washington Posts talking about Republicans being split. So all the media here in the States, by the way, seems to indicate that Republicans within the Republican Party are the ones who will kill the bill. Do you see that as a reality, or do you see the Republican Party uniting over this? And like you're saying, Senator McCormick, just making those appropriate in-flight adjustments to try to make it work?
Well, let me start by saying 60 days ago, if I'd have been on your show and you would have asked me about the Big Beautiful Bill, and I would have said, you listen, 60 days from now, we're going to have a bill that does these following things, you know, and gets passed by the House and goes to the Senate. Most of the media would have said that's not going to happen. You know, we can't find that point of agreement. So I take all the, and having lived through a campaign over the last 18 months, I take all those headlines with a grain of salt. I can't remember how many headlines I saw that Casey was beating me by, you know, 12 points. So I pretty much take that with a grain of salt. But I do think this is a balancing act. So I do think we're going to have to be thoughtful about making improvements to the bill that still are able to get the majority in the House and Senate. But I don't think failure is an option. You know, there's only been five times in the last 100 years where the Republicans have had the House, the Senate, and the presidency. That's a unique opportunity to make change. And the 2017 tax cuts, which are now extended, are pro-growth economic policy that benefits, the large majority of those cuts benefit people that make $400,000 or less. It's a tax cut for every single American. A family that makes $50,000 a year gets a $2,500 tax cut. If we didn't pass that or extend that, those 2017 tax cuts, everybody would get a raise in their taxes by, you know, if you're at $50,000, $2,500. So this is good. This is, by and large, good tax policy that's going to help grow the economy. And the key things that are in here are the priorities that President Trump ran on. So that doesn't mean it's perfect, and I don't like everything in it, but I do think when we get around the table and start to try to improve it, we'll be able to make some adjustments. And my guess is we're going to be able to get the majority in the House and the Senate and the president all aligned here. But we're gonna have to work hard at it, and that's going to be kind of around the clock for the next 30 days, is my guess.
Until then, though, you're right now, you're in the Middle East, and that's where we're joining, you know, you're joining us live from. Final question here, Senator Dave McCormick. You've told me, and I know your wife, Dina, has spoken about being an American citizen, but a proud Egyptian American. As this is the first time you said that you've been in the Middle East since October 7th, obviously. What strikes you and Dina? You must have conversations about the state of what's happening. And I just wondered if you were willing to share with us on a personal level, especially with Dina and her heritage, what this trip means to you.
Well, I think, you know, I think our impressions are, you know, sort of two things that may seem in conflict. On one hand, you look at what's happening in the United Arab Emirates. You look at, you know, the incredible innovation. You look at what's happening in Israeli society, the incredible innovation, the incredible success, really at the forefront of technology and dynamism and entrepreneurship. You look at the Abraham Accords, which were sort of the most significant under President Trump, the first term, the most significant breakthrough in peace that brought Israel together with the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain and others. And you see such promise, such opportunity, such dynamism. You know, 2/3 of the people in this region are under 30 years old. It's a young area that's growing and dynamic. And so Saudi Arabia is, you know, at the forefront of this as well. So it's so exciting. And then on the other hand, it will absolutely break your heart because there's so much conflict and turmoil. There's human suffering that breaks your heart to see it, whether it's in what's happening in Syria or what has happened in Syria, or whether it's even seeing the innocents that are being affected on the ground in Gaza, you know, women and children that are being hurt by the fact that Hamas launched this attack and then Hamas hides among the population. So it'll both break your heart and inspire you with the future. And you know, it's hard not to think that we can find a path through the current challenges with Iran and Gaza and Syria. But we have to do it with both an optimism and a vision for the future, but also a steely-minded reality that this is a tough neighborhood, and you have to trust but verify, and maybe not distrust until you verify. And so that's the balancing act that I think we need to do as members of the Senate and as the administration needs to think about this. I think the leaders in the region need to do. And you know, I leave sobered but hopeful.
Well, Senator Dave McCormick, safe travels home to you and your wife, Dina. Thank you so much for joining us live from the Middle East.
Don Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.